Welcome to the Perfume Podcast, creativity, scents, inspirations.
She's the Coast Guard Keeper of Boston Light, the 70th Keeper, with the first 69 having been men. Today is with us Sally Snowman. Welcome, Sally.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're truly welcome. And so you are the U.S. Coast Guard Keeper of Boston Light. Can you tell us a little bit the story of Boston Lighthouse?
It's interesting that, you know, these programs are recorded for 20 minutes or a half hour. I could talk an entire day on the history of Boston Light. There's 305 years of its history. So just giving highlights of all of that. Back when the Boston was being settled by the British government, the way that you get into the harbor is kind of tricky. And that was a good thing because it was easy to fortify it because it had islands that you had to zigzag through. And what the problem with that is on the outer harbor, there were ledges and islands. And if the ships missed the turn, it was a 1 mile wide opening, they would flounder and the ship would break up. They lose the cargo and they lose the people on board. If you're trying to create a colony, that's not going to help grow it. So they decided that they needed a lighthouse in order to mark the entrance to the harbor, to be a way shower, you know, come this way. And Boston Light was the first established light station in colonial America. It was finished being built in 1716, and it's on a little island. It's only 1.5 acres, which is the size of about a football field. The bigger islands are there. However, this was the critical island that you wanted to go around. It was sort of the worst ones were to the other side of it. So here, the lighthouse was built. And it was a family lighthouse station. So the keeper that came out had a wife, children, and a slave that maintained the light. And unfortunately for that keeper, within 2 years, he drowned his wife, one of his daughters, and a slave. And then they had a second keeper come on board. He drowned within 3 days. So it had sort of a rough start back in 1716 to 1718. And then we've had many other keepers since then, as was mentioned, on the 70th keeper. So as the technology changed and what have you, the keepers had to keep up with all of that. And we talk about a light station. And what the light station does is it throws out a beam of light to show the ships the safe way to come into whatever harbor they're coming into or departing it. However, it's not always a clear night. We have inclement weather, we have snowstorms, sleet, and where the light can't be seen. So in 1719, Boston Light got their fog signal. And what the fog signal was is what we call a blown up cannon. It couldn't be used for a weapon anymore because the iron was fatigued. It would blow up and it would kill those who were firing off the cannon. So just with black powder would be lit. So there would be a ba-boom. And so initially, the keeper at Boston Light would fire off the cannon once every hour. Wow. Remember, these were sailing ships, and without, you know, power, with engines and propellers and things like that. Yeah. So sometimes they would get becalmed, and other times they'd have such heavy winds that it would be ripping the sails off the ship and heavy seas coming onto the boat. Yeah. So by the 1 hour, you might say, well, that's a long time when you think the speed of vessels of today. And then as the ships went from sail to power, they would fire them off, or actually when the sailboats got faster, it was every 30 minutes. When power came into place, they had to come up with a better widget. But that Hannon was used from 1719 to 1851.
Wow.
And then it went to a bell, and then it went into machinery, steam-powered machinery with different kinds of horns and whistles and things like that. So once that all came into being, they needed more than one keeper on the island. So in 1852, a second keeper was brought on board with his family. And then we had another time where it needed to have a third keeper because the technology changed so much, they needed literally more manpower. Women keepers were far and few between in our country. So here we are now into the 21st century. And the light that we have at the top of the tower was brought out in 1859. So there were three keepers at the time. They added another keeper's house. And now with the new technology of the fog signal devices and for the new crystal we got, it was made in France, made of 36 prisms, and it needed to be rotated on what we call chariot wheels or truck wheels. And today, in 2021, that light is still there. It's 162 years old. And we have some glitches sometimes, because the 19th century and 21st century technology doesn't always talk to each other. So over these many, many years that we've had, 305, the changes in the technology has been significant. And even today, we have new fandangled fog signals that do not set themselves up, set themselves off. The boater does it. The mariner does it, where they use their VHF FM marine radio, and they go on a certain channel, and they click the mic for five or more times, and it activates the fog signal. That's how automated we are compared to our 162 lens at the top of the tower. So that's a quick snapshot. Oh, I want to mention one more thing. During the family lighthouse station, that ended in 1960 when they went to a stag station when it was just all men at the lighthouses. The women and family were sent to the mainland because things were automated and they didn't need to have the responsibility of having other people on the island. And at one time in the 1920s into the 30s, there were 19 kids, three wives, and three keepers on an island that's the size of a football field.
Oh my goodness.
With three outhouses. At the time, there was no running water, so no flush toilets. Oh. That just boggles my mind.
Oh my goodness. They really managed those, yes.
So that's a snapshot of 305 years.
Wow, no, it's a good story, really. And how did you choose to become the Coast Guard keeper of Boston Light? How did it happen?
That's an interesting story in itself. I'm on the Coast Guard payroll as a civilian keeper, which means I don't have any law enforcement powers. I don't wear the Coast Guard military uniform. So I'm civilian. And the Coast Guard has a civilian component to it for volunteers. It's called the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And I joined the auxiliary 45 years ago. And around 1990, the Coast Guard wanted to have some backup keepers for Boston Light. There were three male keepers out on the island. However, they needed their time off. They had a rotation of 2 weeks on and 1 week off, but they had vacation time. There was time for them to go to school. They had sick leave and distant families and things like that. And they needed another resource to cover that personnel that was missing from the island. So they were asking auxiliarists if they would like to be trained as assistant volunteer keepers. So my husband and I said, we'd love to do that. And we started that in 1994. And then in 1996, something else happened. The National Park Service established the Boston Harbor Islands National and State Park. And Boston Harbor has 34 islands and peninsulas in it. And Boston Light Little Booster Island is one of them. Now, the interesting thing is that, yes, the Park Service has now a park, but all the owners of those peninsulas and islands, which remain the owners and still maintain the island with access to the public to visit. So the Coast Guard, being military, it was like, oh my, how are we going to make that work? Because it's owned by the military. However, it was congressional law that told the Coast Guard that they had to have at least some access to the island. So in 1999, the Park Service did a pilot program for a few weeks on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, bringing visitors out to the island. And so they asked me if I would help them out, because my husband and I love Boston Light so much. We did 5 years of research and wrote a book called Boston Light, A Historical Perspective. The Park Service needed to be come up really quick on the history of Boston Light to give the tours. So they asked if I would help train their rangers in the history and then help out during the pilot program. So I said, sure, fine. And then what happened in 2000, the island became allowing more tours. We were allowing up to 100 tour visitors on the island a day with two tours a day. And the auxiliary was asked if we could give volunteers to help with the tours. So they came to Sally and said, Sally, could you recruit some auxiliarists as tour guides out of Boston Light? And I said, sure. And they said, oh, by the way, would you also help recruit more auxiliarists to be assistant keepers on the island? And I said, okay, sure. And then we had 9/11. We had a terrorist attack in New York City where the Twin Towers collapsed. Thousands of people died and were injured. And the Coast Guard had to rethink their security. And the country established a new department called the Department of Homeland Security, and they absorbed the U.S. Coast Guard. So it was a huge game changer. The Coast Guard upped the ante on military protection of our shores and what have you. And one of the things that the Coast Guard wanted was those three active duty on Boston Light. That was sort of like a unique job. There wasn't any law enforcement there. We never had any problems with visitors or what have you. So the Coast Guard wanted to remove those three active duty, hire a civilian keeper, and use auxiliaries to man the island with a civilian keeper. They did a national search. I put in my application and I got the job. The job found me. It was so serendipitous. And so the question that gets asked is, Sally, what were you doing before you were hired in 2003? I was a college professor. So here I am, a college professor, turned my housekeeper. Now, what are the odds of that happening?
That's really beautiful.
And then the story continues. When I got hired in 2003, the Coast Guard wanted to divest the island. They wanted to give it to a steward that had the wherewithal to maintain a historic landmark, which Boston Light is. And it's being the first established light station in colonial America. And the Park Service and the Coast Guard were negotiating for the Park Service to take the island. My job was only going to be for 18 months to 2 years. And then the Park Service is going to hire me. Well, at the last minute, it fell through. I've been at the job for 18 years. So I've had the longest federal temp job in the country. They probably haven't had them for 18 years. And right now, the Coast Guard is once again in the process of finding a new owner for the island. So my time is going to be ending. I see it coming. But again, there's just so many stories to tell. But that's how I got my job, and that's why I'm still doing it.
Yeah, no, I really find it beautiful because, I mean, I get a sense of of something really, I don't know if we can call it destiny, but anyway, it's really something special around that. It's really something special. And so, I mean, 18 years, what do you like the most about the island and the lighthouse?
I'm going to back up when I was a kid. And my dad was in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And then when I grew up, I joined the auxiliary too. And he arranged to have a rendezvous of the auxiliaries to bring their boats and anchor up the island and have a tour of the island. And I was 10 years old at the time. So we took the powerboat out, got the dinghy, rowed ashore. I stepped on the island, looked up at the tower and said, "Daddy, when I grow up, I want to get married here." And in 1994, I did. So my love affair, my passion for Boston life started when I was 10 years old. And I would like dream about, gee, I wonder what it would like to be a keeper out there. And here I am, the keeper. And so I got that attachment back in 1960. And it has this aura, it has its own spirit. It's, although it's just a mile from the closest piece of mainland and 9 miles to the city of Boston, it transcends to this other place. And because the water is right there, it's only the size of a football field, you're really, really close to it. And just on a calm day, you have little wavelets splashing on the rocks. And then during a storm, there's real whooshing sounds. And I've been there for all of that. I've been out there in a blizzard and 20-foot seas in dead calm when there wasn't even a breath of air out there. You think, well, what do they have for wildlife out there? Well, we have rats and muskrats, the birds that come through, you know, through the migration. And then we have these wildflowers that grow on the island. And there was one particular one called peppermill. And that, it turned out that we were the only island in Boston Harbor that had that species of flower. So in the book that my husband and I wrote, we have a section on what is around the island, the lobsters and the clams and all the different kinds of seaweeds, and then the description of the wildflowers on the island as well. And one of the things that's amazing is at night when you're sleeping and at the top of the tower, there's this 9-foot crystal made up of 336 individual prisms. And there's 12 sections of them. And in the middle of the 12, there's a round bullseye that magnifies a 1,000 watt lamp or bulb to 2 million candle power. So we're so close on the island that when looking out the window and the light is rotating, you can literally see 12 beams of light coming out. Versus when you're on the water or the mainland, you just see a 10 second flash. I meditate on that. I just watch that. And I go into this altered state of bliss. And I feel so safe. People say, Sally, you're out there with one or two other auxiliarists. Do you ever get afraid? And when you're looking at these beams coming out, they drop down, you know, miles out, like, you know, 20 miles out. They're dropping down to the horizon. So it feels like I'm protected, that beam of light, like aura. So no, I've never been afraid out there.
Wow. Yes, I was really thinking about this, how keeping a lighthouse is really about being in a relationship, let's say, with nature, but also with light. Because I can only imagine, of course, what this experience of those 12 rays, let's say, but can be. It's really phenomenal.
So the other piece is I work my butt off there too. There's lawn mowing, there's maintenance, anything that you do in your home that have the yard to it, you need that. We have auxiliaries that are electricians and plumbers and carpenters that the Coast Guard approves of them, and then they can do a lot of the routine maintenance out there. So I have painted sort of this romantic story out there, but the work is, it keeps me strong and healthy.
Yeah.
And I love doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, this is very interesting. How such, let's say, a poetic environment in the reality, in the everyday life, is also very, maybe hard one, but it requires a lot of work. So it's really interesting, this balance, let's say, between hard work and, I would call it, delight. So really, a kind of a great experience. It's so interesting. And I was also thinking about the unique flowers that you say. So it's really a place of uniqueness in some way also. It's really amazing. And I was also wondering what really visitors feel when they come. Are they surprised? Are they, I don't know, excited, or how do you think they feel when they come to visit?
They're in awe. They're in total awe. And the time on the island is an hour and a half. That's the perfect amount of time. But it's interesting when they're getting off the boat, you can tell they're a little anxious, you know, what's going to happen, things like that. And then the time it's time to go, it's like, come on, you got to board the boat. You got to get back to Boston. And so just in that hour and a half, it's a big chill pill. And they're just relaxed and looking out at the horizon. And when they usually come on board, they're chatting, you know, chatter, chatter, chatter. When they're leaving, it's more quiet and subdued. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really an experience. And I think since you really lived there and you've been living there for really a long time, I would ask you, what this island and this lighthouse have taught you? What's the learnings you may share that you got there?
I learned a lot about facility management and how to manage 80 volunteers, train them, schedule them, get them transportation. My administrative skills had to be developed very quickly. The other thing is my spirituality grew up there. I just feel so close to spirit and feeling oneness with the planet, and just knowing that this job was for me, that I was just in the right place at the right time. And it has been an amazing experience. I see the end coming, but the growth that I had as a human being I think that I'm a more kinder, open person for learning how to deal with many different agencies, the Park Service, not-for-profits, working with the military. And we have a lot of foreigners that come to Boston Light with their own stories and experiences with lighthouses. So I also became a very good listener. So it's not just it's exchanging information. So I found that the more years I did it, the less talking I did and the more listening. And I think I'm a better person for that.
This is so beautiful, thinking of, let's say, an isolated place that in the reality, it's a place of exchange. This is truly, truly beautiful. I love that. And so you mentioned your book. Would you like to share any resource that our listeners may look for? So before we end our session.
I think that this, my whole life has been a story about loving the water, loving nature, and the number of people that I have met. I'm on the lecture circuit a lot too. So when I'm not on the island in the wintertime, I live, breathe, and eat Boston Light. And the stories that I have to tell, maybe when I do retire, I'll write some of those anecdotal stories. One story I do love is, there's the very first lightkeeper was Worthy Lake, George Worthy Lake. And now they have descendants generations later. And a few years ago, they brought their clan out and they had five generations. They had two little babies that were just months old. And there was one aunt that was in her 90s. And to have them on the island was amazing, to get that connection.
Yes, it's really about not only a personal story, but like an heritage. I'm thinking about an heritage of people, of traditions, of experiences.
And talking about tradition, the lighthouse keeping for the Coast Guard, Boston Light is the last manned or woman light station in the United States. It's in the process of finding new stewards, so I will have the legacy of being the last Coast Guard keeper of Boston Light. And I'm so honored to have that. It's very moving for me to know that I had that honor. Now the lighthouses are still flashing at around the country. The Coast Guard's mission is to divest all the lighthouses because they're all historic landmarks and what have you. They're really, really expensive to keep the structures, but the technology is so modern now, there's very little maintenance. So Boston Light, with its new owner, the Coast Guard will still maintain the light at the top of the tower and the fog signal electronic device. So the Coast Guard's not walking away from the duties of the lighthouses. They're just managing them electronically.
I think it's so important to keep those places alive, and it's really a treasure. I would call it a treasure, but
it is a treasure. Yes.
And so thank you, Sally, for being with us today. And I think we should meet again, but let's begin with one. because so much to say. And so thank you for being with us today. And thank you to our listeners. And we'll meet again for our next session in the Perfume Podcast. Thank you.
It was a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
You listen to the Perfume Podcast. If you're interested in creativity coaching, scents, and aromatherapy, please check my website, fiordicamomilla.org.